You're listening to The Rick Smith Show on the Progressive Voices Network.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. What a day in Congress. What a day today was. Seriously. Republicans got seriously their hats handed to them. And in a bad way. I mean, they got their butts kicked. This whole narrative that, you know, she was going to be overly emotional, and that, you know, there was even one statement I said, they could probably make her cry. You're not going to make a 33-year diplomat cry ever. Stop it. And again, the misogyny right there front and center. And in fact, so much so that the Republicans had to have their attack dog, this Representative Stefanik, because they didn't want to have a guy go after Ms. Yovanovitch. And you go, here's the reality. We've seen those games play out. We've seen the stunts. It didn't work, and it surely did not work today. It was really quite remarkable how every Republican, and this is the amazing part of their argument. There's no argument to be made here. But every one of them, oh, thank you for your service. Oh, you're such a well-qualified person. And, oh, you know, thank you for all of your years of dedication. And, oh, you're, well, basically the giant, behind kissing. Only to then turn and go, well, it was quite remarkable. And she handled it, I thought, really well. There were a couple of really key moments that I thought were most important. There was the main admission that she made to Jim Himes, the Democrat from Connecticut, who basically, you know, said, you know, would you have suspended the military aid that our Congress had allocated for Ukraine? And she said she would not have. She would have opposed freezing the spending. It needed to get there. She also said that she would have never asked Zelensky to investigate Hunter Biden or Burmese. Never gotten into that conspiracy theory. She would have never gotten there. And she was then asked, you know, well, did President Trump have a legitimate concern of Ukrainian corruption? And she said, that's what he says. And I thought that was pretty good. Also, you had the Republican from Ohio, Brad Wenstrup. He asked, the obvious question, does a president have the right to choose their ambassadors? And she had a great response, which was, I obviously don't dispute the president has the right to withdraw an ambassador at any time for any reason. But what I do wonder is why it was necessary to smear my reputation. And that's, you know, that's part of this as well. He could have just fired her. He could have just said, you know what? We're bringing you back. We're moving you somewhere else. Could have done it, but he had to go about it in a way that she knew it, and that you discredit her. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I've got the power to do it, but I want to do it in the worst, meanest, cruelest way possible. I just thought it was, you know, those are a couple of moments. I mean, there was a bunch of that came out of the testimony today, but you know, there were just a couple of those really key moments, and those were two of them. Also, you had the Republican lawyer, the counsel for the lawyer for the Republican side, a guy named Steve Castor. He evidently read off of, you know, some social media posts from Ukrainians who were upset about candidate Trump. And look, you know, the reality is there's a lot of that. And I thought, you know, because understand the what the Republicans are trying to peddle is that it wasn't the Russians who meddled. No, it was the Ukrainians. And they were behind the Democrats and Hillary, and they didn't want Donald Trump. So they were saying mean things about him. So Castor read off some of this stuff, and you know, she very appropriately and very calmly, you never saw her get angry or or show any real emotion. She was just, as a matter of fact, she said, quote, those elements you've recited don't seem to be a plan or plot of the Ukrainian government to work against President Trump. Those are isolated instances. She says, I've come to learn public life can be quite critical. I'd remind again, and this is the part that's important, that our own U.S. intelligence community has conclusively determined that Russia, not Ukraine, interfered in the 2016 election. Again, right back to, you know, they throw out this conspiracy. They throw out, oh, well, you know, could it be this? And she's like, no. Reality is our intelligence community knows who it is. They know what they've done. It's you guys. It's you know, I saw a frame, you know, earlier. It's the Benghazi boys are back, but they see no evil. And that's basically what this is. You've got Nunes. You've got Jordan. You've got all of these hacks who, truth of the matter is, you know, these attack dogs who don't seem to be very bright. But, boy, when they get onto a bone, like, there's a conspiracy, they don't let it go, even in the face of actual facts, which the Republicans brought none out today. Their only real point, truthfully, is that, well, you know, she wasn't on the call, which is true. She wasn't. Next week, people who were on the call will be there. Now, interestingly enough, you know, Donald Trump said he wasn't watching, but evidently was tweeting stuff out. In fact, a couple of tweets got out about Ms. Yovanovitch as she was testifying. In fact, and good on the Democrats for catching this. They were actually able to bring it up and ask her about Trump's tweets, which were, there were two of them that were directed specifically at her. The first one, everywhere Maria Yovanovitch went turned bad, Donald Trump tweeted. She started off in Somalia. How'd that go? Then fast forward to Ukraine, where the new Ukrainian president spoke unfavorably about her in my second phone call with him. It is a U.S. president's absolute right to appoint ambassadors. And it's true. It's his right. I'd like to see the second phone call, please, because we saw the third one. Not good. In a minute, we'll get to the first one. He goes on in the second tweet. They call it serving at the pleasure of the president. The U.S. now has a very strong and powerful foreign policy, much different than the preceding administrations. It's called, quite simply, America First. With all of that, however, I have done far more for Ukraine than, oh. And it seems like everything comes back to Obama, doesn't it? He's got like an Obama complex. Now, he's right. You know, the ambassadors, they serve at the pleasure of the president and can be recalled. But like she said, did you have to really smear her? Now, the argument that he's making is, you know, the Ukrainian president spoke badly of her. I didn't see that in either the first that was released today or the third. So, you know, like I said, the only thing that the Republicans have had is, you know, all the only defenses. Well, this is all hearsay. There's nobody who was right on there. And like I said, next week it's coming. So you got to remember this. Remember all of these arguments that Republicans are making this week of, you know, well, you know, none of this stuff matters because they weren't actually there. No, they're laying the groundwork. They're setting the building blocks for what is coming. And what is coming is the people who were on the call telling us exactly what the call was. And what's interesting to me is Trump later told reporters that, quote, you know what? I have the right to speak. I have freedom of speech, just as other people do. They've taken away the Republicans' rights. No, Republicans got to ask questions in the order of the rules. It's interesting that the Republicans immediately tried to break all of the rules from this right from the start. They know what the rules are. You know why? Little secret? It's their rules. They're the ones who did it. This is what Boehner put into place for all of this. So these are their rules. And evidently they don't like rules when it applies to them. There you go. Now, I really wish Donald Trump would speak. He's got the right. Absolutely. I wish he would come and sit and speak. Test if the phone call was so perfect, come and sit and testify. Just a thought. But today, you know, the big bombshell, evidently, that the administration thought that was going to change everything. The transcript of the first phone call. because we now find out that the infamous phone call on July 25th isn't the only one. There were actually three. The first one, it was in April, and they dropped that today, April 21st, aboard Air Force One. There was this little phone call, and I thought I would read some of it because it's really boring. The president, Donald Trump, says, "I'd like to congratulate you on a job well done, and congratulations on a fantastic victory." The Ukrainian president, "Good to hear from you. Thank you very much. It's very nice to hear from you. I appreciate the congratulations." Trump, "It was an incredible election." Zelensky, "Again, thank you very much." As if the first thank you wasn't enough. "Again, thank you very much. As you can see, we tried very hard to do our best. We had you as a great example." So right from the beginning, Zelensky gets the way you get into Trump's good graces, praise the hell out of him. "Oh, this is all because of you. I didn't do it. We didn't have anything to do with our winning this election. It was you. Oh, thank you." Trump goes on to say, "I think you'll do a great job. I have many friends in Ukraine. I have many friends in Ukraine, and they think, frankly, they expected you to win. And it's really an amazing thing that you've done." So he's got lots of friends in Ukraine, evidently, because everybody loves him. And everyone expected him to win. Nobody expected this guy to win. Just how it worked out. Somehow he did. He goes on to say, "I guess in a way, I did something similar. We're making tremendous progress in the U.S. We have the most tremendous economy ever." I got to pimp the most tremendous economy ever. "I wanted to congratulate you. I have no doubt you will be a fantastic president." Again, going back to, hey, congratulations for like the 1700th time. Zelensky goes, "First of all, thank you very much again for the congratulations. We in Ukraine are an independent country. We're an independent Ukraine. We're going to do everything for the people. You are, as I said, a great example." Got the suck up part right there. "We are hoping we can expand our job as you did. You will always also be a great example for many. You are a great example for our new managers, and I'd like to invite you, if possible, to the inauguration. I know how busy you are, because you're just like the king and all that." He goes, I know how busy you are, but if it's possible for you to come to the inauguration ceremony, that would be great. Great thing for you to do, to be with us on that day." Trump, "Well, that would be very nice. I'll look into that, and we'll give us the date, and at a very minimum, we'll have a great representative. Or more than one from the United States will be with you on that great day. So we will have somebody at a minimum, a very, very high level. And they'll be with you there. An incredible day for an incredible achievement." Zelensky says, "Again, thank you. We look forward to your visit and to visit the visit of the high level delegation. But there's no word that can describe our wonderful country. How nice and warm and friendly our people are, how tasty and delicious our food is, and how wonderful Ukraine is. Words cannot describe our country," Zelensky says. "So it would be best for you to see it for yourself. So if you can come, that would be great. So again, I invite you to come." And it sounds like Zelensky wants to wrap this up. Trump goes, "Well, I agree with you about your country, and I look forward to it. When I owned Miss Universe, they always had great people. Ukraine was always very well represented." And I'm going, what does that mean? Never mind. He goes, "When you're settled in and ready, I'd like to invite you to the White House. We'll have lots of things to talk about. I'm guessing the Ukrainian women for the Miss Universe pageant. But we're all with you." Zelensky says, "Well, thank you for the invitation. We accept the invitation and look forward to the visit. Thank you again. The whole team and I are looking forward to the visit. Thank you again for the congratulations. And I think it will be great if you could come and be with us on the very important day of our inauguration. The results are incredible. They are very impressive for us. So it would be absolutely fantastic if you could come and be with us on that day." Trump, "Very good. Very good. We'll let you know as soon. And we'll see you soon, very soon. Regardless, congratulations, and please say hello to the Ukrainian people and your family. Let them know I send my best regards from our country." Zelensky, "Yes, well, thank you again. Have a safe flight. See you soon. Trump, take care of yourself and give a great speech today. You take care of yourself, and I'll see you soon." Zelensky, "Thank you very much. It is very difficult for me, but I will practice English, and we will meet in English. Thank you very much." Trump, all that's beautiful to hear. That's really good. I could not do that in your language. I'm very impressed. Thank you very much. He basically admits he's an idiot. He's not even going to try. Zelensky, thank you very much. I'll see you very soon. Trump, great day. Good luck. Zelensky, goodbye. End of conversation. So that was really boring. That was really bad. And, you know, it was just, you know, why it's been held up, I don't know. But if you remember, you know, there's something missing. There's the missing anything on corruption. Weren't we told back then that corruption was brought up in this phone call? Well, evidently they're now blaming Alexander Vindman for it not being there. Because somehow we've got to discredit the star witness of next week. But again, this was supposed to be the great phone call. This was supposed to change everything. And it just kind of fell with a, what? Yeah, great fun. And oh, by the way, Devin Nunes felt the need to read that into the testimony today. That tells you how much of nothing the Republicans have. It just is what it is. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back and talk a little bit about Roger Stone, guilty on all counts. Didn't get much press this week. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about what that means, what it means for the Trump impeachment. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Nothing more American than workers standing up, and the union gives a voice to win. On the Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 2014. That was the day 4 workers were killed and a 5th injured during a chemical leak at a DuPont insecticide plant near Houston, Texas. The plant used methyl mercaptan in its production of insecticides. 24,000 pounds of the deadly chemical were released through 2 valves in a poorly ventilated building on site. The U.S. Chemical Safety Board found numerous flawed safety procedures, design problems, and inadequate planning. Days earlier, liquid methyl mercaptan had solidified in piping, causing a blockage. Workers attempted to clear it by spraying the pipes with hot water. They didn't realize they had cleared the blockage, which then created a high-pressure buildup of the chemical in other piping. When 2 workers went to drain those pipes in a routine procedure, they were overcome by toxic vapors. Another 2 workers answering the subsequent distress call were also killed. DuPont blamed the workers for the release of the toxic gas, but the CSB found a number of violations. The building where the release occurred had an inadequate toxic gas detection system. Ventilation fans were not working, and the workers were not required to wear additional breathing protection for tasks they performed there. Line clearing procedures were faulty, routinely exposing workers to toxic fumes. The board also found that DuPont worked to conceal from environmental regulators as many as 4 releases of methyl mercaptan 2 days before workers were killed. The CSB asserted that design flaws prompted months of clogs before the deadly incident. More generally, they noted that the design of the building that housed the pesticide unit inherently increased the threat of exposure to workers and the public. DuPont opted to close the plant in 2016 rather than meet recommendations of federal regulators.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So while today everyone was focused on Ms. Yovanovitch's testimony and the idiotic phone call and Trump's tweets and, well, basically the nothing burger of the Republicans' argument to defend Trump, Roger Stone found guilty on all counts. All 7 counts, ranging from obstruction to giving false statements to the House, to a House committee, to witness tampering. He joins Michael Cohen, the fixer, Trump's fixer, Trump's campaign manager, Paul Manafort, Trump's campaign lackey, George Papadopoulos, this guy Pinedo and Vanderwaan, Michael Flynn and Rick Gates. They're awaiting sentencing. But, you know, a number of people, you know, going to jail, doing jail time, and Stone going to be the next one. And he's the one I'm most thrilled to see it go away because he was such an arrogant. Let's not. here to share some thoughts on the trial and what this means for the impeachment process. I've asked Justin Hendricks to come talk with us. He's the organizer for the March for Truth. Justin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how are you doing tonight?
I'm actually really good, given what's transpired today.
It sort of feels like a little bit of a turning point.
It actually does. It feels like at this moment that, you know what, maybe there's some hope here.
Yeah, I think so. There seems to be a real turn of the tide. At least, I don't know, we can hold on to that for another 24 hours.
Because, you know, I look at, you know, Ms. Yovanovitch's testimony, and I remember, you know, people saying, oh, they're going to make her cry, and she's going to break down, there's going to be all this. I'm going, no, I don't think that's going to happen. She literally kicked the snot out of them today.
Absolutely. Spine of steel.
And push back against the whole narrative that, you know, look, that, you know, there was corruption there, and I'm sure there is, but that, you know, this Trump's mindset was about corruption. It wasn't. It was purely about getting Giuliani in there and getting the Ukrainian president to say that Biden did something wrong.
Absolutely. I think we have to hand it to Adam Schiff as well. I think he was clearly just, somebody said on Twitter, in fuego today, really just on top of the entire testimony, and the questioning was excellent. Everyone seemed extraordinarily prepared, and they really, I think, you know, masterfully brought those points home. And you know, it certainly it doesn't hurt that the president totally shot himself in the foot by deciding to wade in on Twitter literally as the testimony went on, and I think that really truly backfired for him.
No, and in fact, even so much so that a Fox News host said, you know, this is a turning point of the hearings. This is a turning, and it is, because, you know, before you could make, I got to tell you, I don't know how you defend this guy when he keeps doing this stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, here's a situation where, you know, the GOP is making the argument that all these hearings are boring, and, you know, some in the media were kind of jumping on that narrative and trying to kind of advance that idea that, well, you know, and not getting the same kinds of ratings that the Michael Cohen hearing got or whatever. Not, you know, putting aside the idea that there's multiple day hearings, and you know, the American public kind of understands that it's a marathon, not a sprint on this, in the same way that some of these earlier hearings were in the Mueller investigation.
And it's 10 o'clock in the morning and most of us work.
Absolutely. But then you've got the president, you know, drawing attention to the fact and basically saying, you know, I'm gonna go on Twitter and attack this lady. You know, literally while she's standing or sitting in front of Congress. And I think Schiff bringing that tweet in the way he did was something that will, you know, it'll be remembered. It'll be part of the kind of documentary on these, you know, these days, many years from now.
Yeah, I mean, all of this shows just how inept this president is on any level. And how much, you know, he doesn't care about institution. And, you know, yesterday I was saying that it's remarkable on how such a short period of time he has destabilized not only our country, but the entire world, to where now we're questioning, you know, career diplomats who have stellar credentials, even credentials that Republicans, you know, didn't even try today with her. They didn't even try to impugn her reputation. They just tried to, you know, oh, you're wonderful, thank you for your service, all that, and then go in some bizarre direction of, you know, reading other questions.
Absolutely. And, I think it was really quite a moment, you know, at least Stefanik from here in New York, you know, she sort of got some of the, I suppose, the best moment from the Republican side from their perspective, you know, created some fodder for Fox News. You know, you had Jim Jordan, his sort of normal, sort of crazy histrionics. But, you know, I think that the day it will be remembered, this woman's testimony will be remembered, her spine, her obvious, you know, devotion to the country and her decades of professionalism. And that was extraordinary today. And that's why you and I are both feeling a little optimistic, just to remember that there are people like that in the government. And they can't all be run out, you know, without pushing back.
No, I mean, seriously, I mean, Wednesday's testimony with Taylor and Kent, I mean, you know, people of impeccable reputation, Ms. Yovanovitch, I mean, you really couldn't ask for three better people to put out in front.
Absolutely. And look, what we're hearing tonight about what really happened with Sondland and with the phone call from Trump, you know, it's going to be an interesting week next week. It really pretends to be an even more historic set of days in front of us. So we'll see what happens in the coming days. But, yeah. You know, this is not over.
No, that phone call. I mean, and again, this is one of those things where even if you're a Trump supporter, you've got to really be uncomfortable with the fact that you're having the president and your ambassador having a phone conversation in a public restaurant where someone across the table can hear. But this isn't new. I mean, this is the same guy who had all the, you know, classified documents at Mar-a-Lago just laying on the table. This isn't new for him. But the fact that he uses it's mind-blowing to me.
Absolutely. Not just one person who overheard the call, but apparently three.
Right.
And, you know, in this deposition this afternoon really just seems damning. I mean, you know, you've got firsthand witnesses basically, you know, overhearing this ambassador telling Trump that the president of the Ukraine, you know, loves his, well, can I even say that
on your
show?
Yeah,
loves
yeah.
your ass, right? And that he'll do anything you ask him to do, you know, and Trump says, you know, hey, is he going to do the investigation? I mean, it's literally the, you know, the kind of like evil villain on the nose kind of stuff that you'd expect on like Scooby-Doo or something. I mean, He literally says the crime out loud.
No, and that's the weird thing about this of just how brazen they are. And the fact that, you know, Sondland, you know, reportedly said, you know, he'll do anything you want. You know, that to me, that's. It's an of course moment because Ukraine is so desperate for our support, they will do anything. And that leads them to this kind of bribery, this kind of extortion, this kind of strong arming.
That's right. His soldiers are dying on the eastern front of his country, you know, up against Russia. And you know, I suppose the guy was probably feeling pretty up against a hard place there.
Yeah.
You know, he needs the aid. He needs the help. He's in a tough spot, and you know, that was a wrong thing. It was absolutely wrong for the president to put that man in that situation.
Yeah. Did you read the phone call that was released today?
Which one?
The big phone call that was released today. The April phone call between Trump and Zelensky, the first one aboard Air Force One.
Yes, I haven't read that one very closely.
Don't bother, there's nothing there.
Nothing there, right?
No, it's basically, you know, congratulations, Jay. You did a great job. And Zelensky getting the memo of how you deal with Trump, praising him that the win was because of you. You're the one that was the example. We take great pride in your victory because, you know, our people are doing this too. It's all you. It's all you, Donald. We love you. I mean, it was really remarkable.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like maybe that was actually a perfect phone call. But, you know, the fact that you have one phone call that where you don't do anything that is wrong doesn't make up for the fact that you've done this other thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, he loves to just throw chum in the water like that, just to kind of throw people off or just give his supporters some little piece of evidence that they can cling to, you know, that lets them say, you know, oh, you know, there's evidence to the contrary, which of course just requires people to completely, you know, throw out the whole idea of space-time continuum and the fact that, you know, later on he did some terrible things.
Yeah, it's that both side-isms, you know. Well,
there
are good people on both sides. But, you know, I encourage people to read today's release, the transcript released today of the phone call, because it kind of shows just what kind of a moron our president is. I mean, look at how many times he uses the word great. And look at the fact that Zelensky says, you know, I'm going to learn English so that we can meet in English and we'll speak your language, because I know that's, you know, basically I know that's the only way you're going to be able to understand me. And Trump goes, wow, impressed, you can do that. I could never do that. I'm going, you're just admitting you're a moron.
Well, you know, the subtext of this entire episode, yet again, has really been not only the corruption and the just sort of absurd greed and general wretchedness of this president, but also the plum stupidity. I mean, just really amateur hour, not just by the president, but also by so many people around him. And it's extraordinary. I mean, I think it should. I mean, Ambassador Ivanovich kind of, you know, made this point to some extent today that, you know, it's it's really dangerous. You know, we're in a situation where these are the people leading our foreign policy, and if it hasn't already caused us great damage, it certainly will.
Yeah, it's incredible stuff. But here again, I've got great hope after today. Of the last couple of days of testimony, and next week I think is going to be just full of bombshells. That, you know, if you're one of those people in that middle 15% that hasn't picked a side yet, I think it's going to be really hard to defend what this president's done. But the reason I wanted you to come on is, you know, in the backdrop of all this, that hasn't, in my view, gotten as much attention or really any attention, is this Stone trial. You know, obviously Roger Stone found guilty of all seven counts today. And you know, the most glaring thing to me in all of this, and I've met Roger Stone a couple of times.
Wow.
He's kind of a jerk. What's surprising to me is just how much contact he had with Donald Trump. You know, just how much access he had. I mean, I'm really stunned by that.
Well, you know, I really would encourage your listeners, if they haven't seen it, to go and watch the Netflix documentary Get Me Roger Stone, which is just an incredible, you know, piece of history to kind of watch this almost filmed in a moment in time. You know, most of the discussion shortly surrounding the president's campaign and shortly afterwards his victory. And so, you know, you see this Roger Stone who's triumphant. And you've got many shots in it of Donald Trump, you know, talking about his relationship with Stone and, you know, how far they go back and how important Stone has been to his political career. And, you know, they are absolutely peas in a pod. They go back decades. They've been friends and have worked together for a really long time.
I mean, but, you know, if you're the campaign person, do you really allow this guy to have that kind of direct access? I mean, it's just remarkable to me.
Well, you know, he was, of course, part of the campaign formally, I suppose, until, you know, later in 2015. But then, of course, you know, kind of went away a bit. And that film actually depicts that. It depicts that moment where there's a bit of a split and perhaps almost a sort of sense that he'd better serve Trump on the outside than being on the inside. And, you know, you kind of get this sense that's what he's for. He's for dirty tricks, and he's meant to kind of lurk in the shadows a bit. I mean, that's certainly what he made his career doing.
Yeah. So how much of this, you know, because there was a lot in this trial about WikiLeaks and Stone's, you know, connections there. How much of this is going to possibly be brought back to maybe revive some of the Mueller report?
Well, I mean, that's a big question, and I don't know. It seems to me that to some extent the public conversation has slightly moved on from this, and, you know, for I guess reasonable reasons, of course, everyone's more focused on impeachment than the Roger Stone trial. I didn't even see an enormous amount of discussion about it in the last few days, even as the trial wrapped up, although people did really, you know, note the guilty convictions today. But, you know, one of the key things is that it looks like Donald Trump lied to Robert Mueller, you know, and that's one of the sort of nuggets that we've got out of this trial. You know, one of the things that really seems or really worries me is the fact that, you know, the whole timeline got thrown off. The fact that the campaign may well have, you know, known exactly what they were going to get from WikiLeaks as early as April of 2016, which casts so many different things in a different light. And I think that's that opens up a lot of questions about what happened in 2016, you know, why some of that information didn't end up in the Mueller report, you know, and ultimately what the president was up to and what he knew.
Right. Now, is it now that this trial is over, is it possible to go back and unredact all of those things that were redacted in the Mueller report because of this trial?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question, Rick. I'll find that out. I do think that it will give some more urgency to the calls to get at that redacted material. And, you know, I think you'll see that continue to be an issue and something that, you know, perhaps a future Department of Justice or president could could look into how to make more of that available to the public, certainly.
Right.
And some of that may come out in process, you know, as we go along. There are multiple lawsuits. There's the FOIA request, the Jason Leopold FOIAs that keep producing some of that redacted material and will in perpetuity, it seems like. So there's still a lot more to come on that, I think.
Right.
And there'll be a lot more to learn.
Yeah, what was interesting out of today's hearing is Ms. Yovanovitch saying that, it wasn't the Ukrainians who were meddling in our elections. It was the Russians, and our intelligence community is pretty clear on that. I thought that was an interesting moment because, you know, you bring back to this trial, you know, this is another one of those moments where there are all these connections and all this stuff going on that I think was really difficult to understand while the Mueller investigation was going on and during the hearing that they had. Do you think that, I guess the question is, do you think that this is going to come back up, or do you think the Mueller thing is over?
Well, you know, there may be some ultimate kind of query that has to happen around whether the president lied to Robert Mueller in the written responses that he provided. You know, ultimately the president did not sit in front of Robert Mueller, did not visit the grand jury, did not answer questions in person. So all that was the written material. But, you know, he claims that he didn't have contact with Stone and wasn't aware of WikiLeaks, and that appears to be, you know, not the case, based on this trial. And, you know, one of the more interesting things about the Stone trial is that one of the people who really turned the knife on Roger Stone was Steve Bannon, who, you know, kind of bluntly said Stone was our conduit to WikiLeaks. He was the man. We knew, you know, that we could get in touch with Julian Assange through Roger Stone.
Yeah, I thought that was quite interesting because, you know, Bannon's a guy who he's going to save his own skin.
Absolutely.
There's no help there. And look, and I think, you know, I think Bannon understands that as well, because he knows that Trump's going to save his own skin and throw everybody else under the bus. So that was one of the more interesting moments.
Absolutely. And look, Roger Stone could carry, I think those charges add up to something like possibly as much as 50 years,
right.
You know, and unlikely, I guess the judge would give him all of that, but you know, it's a lot of time that he faces. And he's already angling for a pardon. So we'll see what happens. It could be a very interesting period of time.
Yeah. Do you think Trump would give him a pardon?
I absolutely think that he would. I 100%. And that, you know, he's just given these pardons to these, three military, these three folks in the military who were, you know, convicted of war crimes.
Right.
And, that's an extraordinary thing. And some people have already suggested, you know, he's testing the waters a little bit. He wants to see what kind of pushback he'll get.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, would he pardon Stone when he hasn't pardoned Manafort? Or, you know, I understand him not pardoning Michael Cohen because Cohen turned on him, but Manafort held the line the whole time.
Well, we'll see. You know, I think he had a closer relation with Roger Stone than any of those other individuals. In a longer relationship. And there's also a sense that Stone's really, you know, already angling for it. Apparently he put out his feeler, and you can't make this stuff up. The person he called on to essentially ask the president to, you know, offer him a pardon, and this happened today, is Alex Jones from InfoWars. and so the nature of the kind of the disinformation and this disinformation ecosystem and the personalities involved in it, you know, that's the thing that ties all of this together, the Ukraine scandal, the Mueller investigation, Russian interference. You know, it's just this extraordinary world of alternative facts and, you know, house of mirrors that these people live in.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that Roger Stone would turn to Alex Jones, extraordinary.
No, it is extraordinary, but not surprising. You know, I was at the RNC convention. We did the Radio Row there. During the Republican convention, and Stone and Alex Jones were there. In fact, there was that moment with the Young Turks guy, Cenk Unger, who we had the little dust up with Alex Jones. I was like five feet from that.
Oh, right. I think that's actually depicted in that film, isn't
right.
it? In the Get Me Roger Stone.
Yeah, I was literally right across, watched it all happen. And, you know, you saw all of those characters there, all of these fringe players and all of these, you know, these people who for years were the outside. Now they had found their home. And, yeah, and that was one of the things that I remarked at the time. It was amazing at how much, you know, the right wing blogosphere and how much the right wing echo chamber was front and center in that whole endeavor.
Well, that's kind of one of the meta narratives that eventually people will think of as important to this entire part of history, is just this, you know, the fact that all of these sort of disinformation artists who have concocted this sort of set of alternative world, you know, reality that people are living in this regard, all of that's kind of, to some extent, crumbling back in on itself right now. It's kind of like the snake's eating its tail, you know. This entire set of alternative facts they created around Ukraine, which, you know, they did in order to try to discredit the Mueller investigation and the kind of fundamentals of the story around Russian interference in the 2016 election. You know, that is what's got the president impeached. You know, it's wild. You can't make it up. It's really something.
Yeah. So now given, you know, what we've seen, the guilty verdict today, you know, the testimony we've seen over the last couple of days, do you have any hope that, you know, the supporting crowd wakes up, that there's an epiphany? Are there senators in the Senate that you see this stuff and go, you know, this has got to stop? Because I got to tell you, there's part of me that goes, I'm hoping that the Republicans just want the pain to stop and they're ready to purge this guy, just so this you know, sending that tweet out today was just incredibly stupid on such a major level that they just go, you know what, we got to get rid of him.
You know, I think one of the interesting things I'll tie back to in the Stone trial, actually there was a great piece on Mother Jones yesterday by the journalist Dan Friedman, who was kind of chronicling what was happening in the courtroom. And he wrote down some of the things that went on in the closing arguments on both sides. And the U.S. attorney, you know, he's up against this Stone's attorney, Bruce Rogow, who literally said to the jury that there's nothing to the government's case. And he said, and I'll throw this one out as a quote. He said, "Much of this case, you have to ask, so what?" And the U.S. attorney, Michael Morando, he essentially kind of rejected that argument altogether. He said, you know, so what? You know, truth matters. Truth still matters, okay? And, you know, having to assert that in a court of law, in the final moments of this trial of Roger Stone, this character who's popped up in history at all of these key moments, I mean, it seemed to me to really kind of capture this entire moment we're in right now.
No, that's an excellent point, because, you know, I'm hearing that same so what about the call with the third call with Zelensky. I'm hearing the same kind of thing with this whole, yeah, so what?
That's right.
No, so what? So what? You're undermining our entire geopolitical strategy. You're strong arming a foreign leader for political gain. I mean, there's a lot of so what here.
Absolutely. And I that to me, exactly right. That phrase to me, it sort of summed it all up. And I thought the attorney's argument, you know, really in the face of that was important. You know, the fact that he basically was able to say, like, look, you know, at the end of the day, things do matter. You know, there are facts. There are things like laws, things like norms, things like, things that we can do that either strengthen or tear down the democracy we're in. And, you know, I think we saw not only in the verdict on Stone, but certainly in the ambassador's testimony today, we saw, you know, an indication of what does matter. So maybe the so what crowd, maybe they're on the way out.
Well, let's hope so. Last question I've got for you. What do you, I know you guys, you keep real close tabs on this stuff. What are you looking for tomorrow? Or this coming week? What's the key for the coming week, you think?
Well, you know, I think we've got Sondland, and I think that'll be fascinating. Let me point to one other thing that I'd love to tell your listeners about, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You know, I get involved in the protests, and, one of the things that we're organizing a group of organizations across the country right now is a set of national demonstrations for the evening before the vote on articles of impeachment in the House. And we don't know when that's going to happen, but we know that on the night before it does, we want to come out in good numbers and really try to, signal a turn and signal a change and signal an opportunity for the country to go in a different direction. So we're putting those together at impeach.org if folks want to check that out.
We'll make sure we get that out so folks can take a look at it, impeach.org. So back to what is it that you're looking towards Sondland? For me, the key, I think, is going to be Vindman. I think once you see him in his dress blues, I think the Republicans are really going to go after him in a way that they didn't really try today with Yovanovitch. I think that's going to be an interesting. I think that's going to be the key of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the question is, does he show up in a suit or in his military uniform? We'll see about that. It certainly will he go any further than he went with his closed door, testimony, what comes of that? I mean, I think he, clearly is one of the more important people with regard to just sort of exuding, again, that career public servant. And I think that certainly, will hurt the president if he just says the things that he said in his deposition, So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting week, and I'm looking forward to it. I hope you'll come back and share some thoughts as this continues.
Absolutely, Rick. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Justin. I appreciate it. Justin Hendricks, organizer for the March for Truth. And impeachment.org. We will get links out so folks can take a look at that and participate. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that federal agents stormed the offices of the Industrial Workers of the World in New York City. They were looking for evidence connecting the organization to radical communists or anarchists. The ransacked office was part of the infamous Palmer Raids. When Attorney General Alexander Palmer responded to the growing Red Scare hysteria by raiding the offices of leftist organizations and arresting thousands. Hundreds of immigrants to the United States were deported during the raids without legal due process. The 1917 Russian Revolution had stoked fears about a spreading communist threat. Newspaper headlines helped to drum up public panic. A week before the IWW raid, a headline on the front page of the Evening World, published in New York City, declared, "Reds in U.S. plotted revolution. Deportation for all radicals." The day after the IWW raid, a Washington Post headline read, "Law to crush Reds." Writing in 1920, Attorney General Palmer warned, quote, "The chief appeal communism makes is to the worker. If they can lure the wage earner to join their own gang of thieves, if they can show him that he will be rich if he steals, so far they have succeeded in betraying him to their own criminal course." Palmer went on to describe how communists had, quote, "stirred discontent, caused irritating strikes, and infected our social ideas with the disease of their own minds and their unclean morals." Palmer's references to workers and irritating strikes demonstrate that he perceived the labor movement as part of the communist threat. Anti-communist hysteria took its toll on the most radical elements of the U.S. labor movement, especially the IWW.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, I think next week is going to be really, really interesting. It's going to be like get the popcorn kind of week, because you're watching history firsthand. I mean, this is one of those things that this doesn't happen often. And to be honest, I remember watching the Clinton impeachment. I did consume as much as almost all of it. And I don't remember it being this compelling. Understand, it was over. Did President Clinton lie about having sex with an intern? And I remember at the time going, I really don't know that you should have ever been asked that question. It wasn't that he was doing anything to destroy the country or harm the country. This was, I believed, and I still do, it was a private matter. Now you could go, well, it was all about perjury, and yes. But I've always asked people, you go, if someone walked up to you with a microphone and shoved a microphone in your face with your wife standing right next to you, you going to tell the truth? You going to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Probably not. So there was a lot forgiven there, in my view. And not just because he was a Democrat. I've said this about sex scandals for other people who aren't hypocrites. It should be a private thing. This shouldn't be what determines the outcome of our country. And look, I think the American people saw that as well. This is completely different. This isn't sex with a porn star. This isn't, you know, any of that stuff. This isn't walking into the Miss Teen USA pageant and checking out all the teen girls. This isn't that. This is usurping the building blocks of the foundation of our nation, which is the integrity of our elections. This is strong-arming someone who clearly needs our support, knowing that you can get them to do anything you want them to do. And the fact that Zelensky, you know, kind of pushed back with, you know, hey, can we get somebody else to do it? Can we get somebody else in the administration to do it? Kind of tells me that even he understood this was bad. That, you know, he got the memo. You kiss up to Trump, you know, how wonderful you are, how terrific you are, anything you need. We'll wine you, we'll dine you, you know, all that. But at the end, you know, he kind of pulled back. Now, that's one of the arguments that the Republicans are making. They're making the argument that, well, he didn't actually do it. We eventually gave the money after the whistleblower's complaint came public. But, well, we did it anyway. Tell that the next time, you know, someone gets arrested for wanting to rob a bank. You know, because there was a conspiracy thought. You know, it's not bad enough to just only do it. If you were thinking about doing it, that's bad too. And all of our laws should apply to everyone, even Donald J. Trump. Now, next week's going to be interesting. You know, starting on Saturday, you're going to have the deposition of this David Holmes. And Holmes is going to be the guy who's going to testify about the phone call in the restaurant. Did Sondland, you know, say, you know, Zelensky's going to do it? He loves your behind. Zelensky loves your behind. He's going to do whatever you want. We're going to eventually find that out. I think, again, that's a damning piece of evidence, because understand what the administration's argument has always been is, well, it's always been about corruption. And in fact, you know, Jim Jordan, the caffeinated rat, he's made this point almost every time he speaks. Which is, you know, we were just going to check him out, see if he was the real deal. And it took us that long to see if he was the real deal. That's why we held the money. It wasn't that we were strong-arming him. No, it wasn't that at all. So this week you had Kent, you had Taylor, you had Yovanovitch. Tuesday you're going to have Jennifer Williams, State Department official. That's going to be interesting. For me, the big one is going to be Tuesday with Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, the Director of European Affairs on the National Security Council. That, to me, that's going to be the moment, I think. Also, you're going to have Kurt Volker, the former U.S. Special Representative for Ukraine. And for me, what's going to be most interesting is how the Republicans handle these guys. They didn't really go after Taylor. They didn't really go after Kent. They didn't go after Yovanovitch hardly at all. Even when they had their, you know, their female pit bull go after her, she didn't really go after her. She went after Schiff. So it was one of those weird kind of things where there obviously must be nothing there, which is weird, you know, because Republicans are really good at ferreting out the dirt. Also on Tuesday, you're going to have Tim Morrison, the top aide on Russia and Europe on the National Security Council. Then Wednesday, you're going to have Gordon Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the EU. Also Wednesday, Laura Cooper, the deputy assistant secretary for Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasia in the Pentagon. And David Hale, U.S. undersecretary to the U.S. State for Political Affairs. Thursday, Fiona Hill, she's going to be testifying. So lots of fireworks next week, in my view. I think that's just going to be just really incredible. Also tomorrow, Mark Sandy, a senior White House budget official. This is going to be one of those key bits because, again, the argument on the money has been we just held it up to find out if Zelensky's the real deal, if he's really going to do what we want him to do. I guess that's the real deal. He's going to testify on Saturday in a closed-door session about his knowledge of Trump's decision to hold on to the $400 million in military aid. And to me, this is another one of those little key things. Was he on the phone call the July 25th? No. But understanding how the money was held up, again, is another one of those little pieces of evidence that has to be put into place. And what I think Schiff is doing, and very well, is he's putting the building blocks into place. He's building the case. And it's not looking really good. And I think today's tweets from Trump showed that frustration, showed the anger that, you know, he's taking a beating and he knows it. And there's really, the old tricks aren't applying anymore. You actually have to play by the rules. And Schiff is doing an incredible job of holding people to the rules. You know, in fact, the Republicans were so frustrated, you could just hear him whining. Because he wouldn't let them speak out of turn. He wouldn't allow them just to you know, toss the rules to the wind. He actually held them to their rules, which I think is really, really important. Also today, and I think Justin alluded to it a moment ago, you have the president today pardoned three service members who have... they've committed crimes and you know, war crimes. And he's just pardoned them. That's going to play to the base. America first, you know, we don't care what our people do. Internationally, this could be a problem. And it's going to be a real problem in the future for, potentially in the future for, if our people are ever captured. You know, I've had people explain to me why you have to do these things. Because, you know, for a while, I was like, well, you know, in war, what's a crime? The job is to go kill people. And I've had, you know, service people explain to me the rules. And again, this is another one of those moments where rules matter, especially if you're going to be claiming to be on the high road, as we do, rules matter. Now, I know this president and this administration and this period, we're chucking all that. But at some point, it does matter. Also, we find out today that the feds are investigating Rudy Giuliani's personal ties to Ukraine. Evidently, you know, him and his two buddies, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, who evidently we now find out had the PAC dinner with Trump. And these are the two guys who actually put Trump on this path, along with Giuliani. Evidently, they were going to get some deals. Did Rudy have a financial interest in this? The feds evidently are looking into it. And you know, what's interesting to me is Ukraine has been one of those places where a lot of these shills have been going. You know, even you know someone like Hunter Biden. I don't defend Hunter Biden being on that board. He didn't belong on that board. It's immoral. It's unethical. It's not illegal, but it's wrong. And it's something that eventually we have to figure out how to deal with. But it's not illegal. And there's no corruption in this. But it is wrong. And, you know, just the appearance of it to me is wrong. But look, I think next week's going to be a really interesting week. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, our good friend Sarah Kenzior is going to be here to share her thoughts on the day's events. Right back.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.